Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Shonaka said, O Suta Goswami, you are the most fortunate and respected of all those who can speak and recite. Please relate the pious message of Srimad Bhagavatam, which was spoken by the great and powerful sage, Sukadev Goswami. Purport. Suta Goswami is twice addressed herein by Shonaka Goswami out of great joy because he and the members of the assembly were eager to hear the text of Bhagavatam uttered by Sukadev Goswami. They were not interested in hearing it from a bogus person who would interpret in his own way to suit his own purpose. Generally, the so-called Bhagavatam reciters are either professional readers or so-called learned impersonalists who cannot enter into the transcendental personal activities of the Supreme Person. Such impersonalists twist some meanings out of the Bhagavatam to suit and support impersonalist views, and the professional reciters at once go to the 10th canto to mis-explain the most confidential part of the Lord's pastimes. Neither of these reciters are bona fide persons to recite Bhagavatam. Only one who is prepared to present Bhagavatam in the light of Sukadev Goswami, and only those who are prepared to hear Sukadev Goswami and his representative, are bona fide participants in the transcendental discussion of Srimad Bhagavatam. Om Agyanat Marandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chaksur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Parakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitamtam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Ladita Shri Vishakha Nitamscha Hey Krishna Karana Sindhu Dinabando Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorange Radhe Vrindavaneshwade Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Pre Vancha kalpa turubhyascha kripa sindubhyevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So the translation once more. Shonaka said, O Suta Goswami, you are the most fortunate and respected of all those who can speak and recite. Please relate the pious message of Srimad Bhagavatam, which was spoken by the great and powerful sage, Sukadev Goswami. So let me begin by thanking the residents of and the associates of Bhaktivedanta Manor for allowing me to speak and for welcoming me into your community. Very much appreciated your hospitality. This verse I want to emphasize today. Prabhupada says here, the members of the assembly were eager to hear the text of Bhagavatam. Oh, sorry. Ah, it's okay. Can everyone hear? Yes. So they're eager to hear the text of the Bhagavatam. This eagerness to hear is so essential for aspiring Vaishnavas. We tend to take for granted hearing because, unlike the eyes, which we can open and close, the ears are always open. Even I've had the experience of putting in the maximum earplugs, and I can still hear. We can't stop it. Even when we're sleeping, we can be awoken by sound. So we tend to take hearing for granted. And unfortunately, we can be exposed to mundane sounds day and night. And part of the process of Krishna consciousness is to learn to distinguish between the mundane sounds and the transcendental sounds. There is a qualitative difference between them, that as we develop in Krishna consciousness, we learn to make this important distinction. Prabhupada speaks about prajalpa in the Nectar of Instruction. Prajalpa meaning wasted talk, useless talk, mundane talk, talk that will not benefit us in any way, as opposed to Krishna katha. So this distinction begins from the very beginning of our Krishna consciousness. It's an essential distinction for each of us to make. And as we develop in Krishna consciousness, that distinction also develops. As Prabhupada says here, even the Bhagavatam can be recited by professional reciters who mis-explain the Bhagavatam, and also impersonalists who also mis-explain the confidential parts of the Lord's teachings. So to avoid prajalpa and to come to hear the actual Bhagavatam spoken by Srila Prabhupada and those of his representatives who speak the Bhagavatam is a great honor. It's a great opportunity to transcend this world. And the power of the sound vibration really cannot be underestimated. Where it's discussed in many places, the power of the sound vibration. It's stated that there are 9 processes of devotional service. The first one is Shravanam. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Mandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atnadimeram. 9 processes. The first one, Shravanam, is hearing. So Krishna consciousness begins, in one sense, by hearing from the proper person. And also, we can understand, we were discussing yesterday with the Bhakti Shastri students, that from hearing we can develop faith. Faith is known as Shraddha. So Shraddha is the beginning of this process of reaching prema. This is described also in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that simply by hearing, at first we may think, what is this nonsense they are speaking? So we come to hear, and then we associate with the sadhus, and from that association we become a little bit enthusiastic. We may take initiation. We give up our unwanted activities, anarthas. Then faith will grow and some taste will come, and we become attached to the process of devotional service. And finally there's some emotion there, some feeling for Krishna, and then prema. So that whole process begins with Shraddha, faith, and Shraddha begins by hearing. It's a scientific process. But there has to be a quality to the hearing. We hear from Queen Kunti, later on in this same canto, she talks about chanting, and Prabhupada in his explanation, he says, the effect of chanting should not be underestimated. It can actually eradicate all sinful activities. It can actually bring us to the presence of Krishna, but there must be a quality to that chanting. So in the same way, there must be a quality to hearing. Those who are infatuated with material assets, and those are mentioned as a high birth, as good education, as bodily beauty, as opulence, we can easily become intoxicated by these things, and then there won't be the quality of hearing or the quality of chanting. Rather, the quality comes when we feel helpless, when we feel completely dependent on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then at that point, that can be that cry. We know that Draupadi, when she was in this helpless, dependent position, she just cried out, "Hey, Govinda." And Krishna says, for the way, for the quality in which she cried, he remains permanently indebted to her. So similarly with hearing, if we take it for granted, if we take it casually, we will not benefit as if we have what Prabhupada describes here, as this eagerness to hear. that by hearing we can actually break the knot of birth and death, break the knot of karma that's binding us, if we can hear properly. In this 9 processes of devotional service, the first one being Shravanam, and for each of the 9 processes, there's a personality who exemplifies perfection in doing that process. So for hearing, it's Parikshit Maharaj. He heard the Bhagavatam from Sukadeva Goswami, and because he heard it purely, he was able to transcend birth and death, able to completely perfect his human form of life. Similarly, Sukadeva Goswami, by speaking, Shravanam Kirtanam, he also became perfect. Prahlad Maharaj, by remembering, he became perfect. In this way, there's a personality who exemplifies each one. And Parikshit Maharaj is the one who exemplifies this hearing. So he sat down, he had one-pointed attention. It was described at the end of the previous chapter, hearing with rapt attention. And Prabhupada gives a process. How can you hear with rapt attention? Well, you have to be pure in mind. Well, how are you pure in mind? Well, you have to be pure in action. So how are you pure in action? You're pure in eating, sleeping, defending, and mating. So it seems like, oh my goodness, how can I do that? But Prabhupada goes on in that purport, and he says, even if somehow or other you hear with rapt attention, you'll be able to see the personality of Godhead in the pages of the Bhagavatam. So this should give us great hope that even we may not have that sort of mind that we can give one-pointed attention, but if we simply try, it will be available to us, the beauty of Krishna consciousness. It's an extraordinary opportunity. It's described also later on in the Bhagavatam that these 9 processes that I mentioned, hearing, chanting, and so forth, they can be done in each of the modes of nature, which can be a little bit disturbing to hear. But you can actually hear in the mode of ignorance, you can hear in the mode of passion, you can hear in the mode of goodness. And similarly with chanting and remembering and so on. So this is another point where we have to use our discrimination and try to be a little introspective. It's described that hearing in the mode of ignorance means there's anger, there's enviousness, there's pride. Hearing in the mode of passion, it may mean, oh, I'm hearing this so I can remember it, and then everyone will be very impressed when I speak these words. They'll think, oh, you're such a good devotee. Hearing in the mode of passion. And similarly, hearing in the mode of goodness, one wants to free oneself from the material entanglement, which of course is better than the other modes. But actually we should hear to please the personality of Godhead. And it's an extraordinary thing, but simply by hearing, we become purified, even if we don't understand. When we were in India, sometimes Prabhupada, although he didn't like to, sometimes he was obliged to speak in Hindi. And he would tell us that if you simply hear, we didn't understand anything, he would say, if you simply hear, you'll become purified. Also, the example is there of Prabhupada's own pastimes when he was in Vrindavan in Parikrama with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and his other disciples. The other disciples were going on Parikrama, and just a few stayed to hear Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur speak. And Prabhupada was among those few. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur remarked, oh, he likes to hear. And Prabhupada said, even though he spoke in such an elevated way, I didn't always understand what he was saying, still I stayed to hear. So this is part of the potency of this hearing from the bona fide person, is that it purifies the heart. This is also mentioned earlier in this canto. There's a wonderful progression in the 2nd chapter of this canto, same canto, Divinity and Divine Service is the chapter name. And it's described that of all the duties that we do and all the responsibilities that we have, the goal is ultimately to please the personality of Godhead, Hari. And one may say, well, how do we please the personality of Godhead, Hari? And it's described that by rendering service to the devotees, by hearing the Bhagavatam, the personality of Godhead Hari will be pleased by that. And it goes on to describe that by this process, Krishna, who is the supersoul in everyone's heart. He cleanses the desire for material enjoyment from our heart because we're trying to relish his messages, which are pure in and of themselves. So it's a mystical process. Krishna is sitting in our hearts, and when he sees our attempt to please him, that pleases him. And then he himself will reduce our desire for material attainments. It's an extraordinary opportunity that we have by Prabhupada's grace. So I can speak of my own experience with this in my own life. I was, before I became initiated, I was in India, and by different circumstances, my then-boyfriend, later husband, and I went to the Calcutta temple. And this was 1971, and it was the time there was a war between India and Bangladesh, and 1 million refugees had entered into Calcutta, escaping the war. And Calcutta was overwhelmed with people. And the Calcutta temple kind of reflected the pressure that was on the city in that the devotees were very stressed, and as a result of their stress, they were not getting along at all. And the situation was difficult materially. The prasadam was inferior. The temple was never convincingly clean. And we were struggling. I was a newcomer, I can say. They were struggling. I was just an observer at that point. And I really decided I didn't want any part of this. You know, Krishna consciousness was interesting, but I had a life to lead. But my god sister, Chitraleka, she said, "You can't leave now because Prabhupada is coming." And so that mantra, it wasn't the Maha Mantra, but it was that mantra that I was hanging on by a thread in the Calcutta temple. And in about a month or so later, maybe six weeks later, Prabhupada came. That was October 1971. And he sat on the Vyasasan, and he looked at the Vaishnavas before him, and he immediately could recognize that this was a dire situation. And he called for an Ishtagosti the next morning in his room in Calcutta. The temple today is the same as it was then, so if you ever go to the Calcutta temple, you can see. And so we were all in his room, and he waited until each and every person was there. And he actually sent one of the sannyasis to find a missing lady. And when we were all there, he spoke to us. And he said the very basic philosophy to us, that we are not these bodies. We are part and parcel of Krishna. We have an eternal relationship with Krishna. We can revive that relationship through the process of Krishna consciousness by hearing and chanting, remembering the Lord. So I was thinking, you know, I was in the corner, a non-devotee, and I was thinking, how is this relevant? What's going on in this temple? You know, what is the relationship? But Prabhupada also, that one of the things that he said that was very surprising at that point, he gave himself as an example of someone who has to tolerate, who had to tolerate difficulties. He was asking us to tolerate the austerities of the temple. And he said when he first came to America, now of all the austerities he could have mentioned, you know, he had this heart attack, two heart attacks on the Jaladutta, in New York with no money, the worst winter in 40 years. Everything was stolen from him at one point, all his valuables, his typewriter, his tape recorder. He didn't mention that. What he mentioned was, for his own austerity, was that he had to share a refrigerator with someone who was keeping meat in that refrigerator. Now, I had just recently given up meat, so I thought, you know, But from a person of that caliber having to do that activity, that was the greatest austerity, more than all these other austerities that he had experienced, which I came to appreciate much later. So he gave himself as the example how to be tolerant of these difficulties and go on with the process of devotional service. So when I had entered Prabhupada's room to attend that Ishtagosti, I felt weighed down by the burdens of this temple, the arguing, the lack of cleanliness, the lack of nice prasadam. And I was thinking, you know, when can I get out? And I heard that istogosti, and when I left, it was like I wasn't touching the ground. So I had an experience of the potency of the words from a pure devotee. It was something truly extraordinary, which was a major event in me deciding to take initiation, because those words could actually lift me from the material condition to something much higher and greater and sweeter. So that is the opportunity we all have every day, to transcend this world and its constant miseries and difficulties, simply by becoming eager to hear. I made a list once of the benefits of the results of offensive hearing. It was a long list, but I have some samples from it here. That if we simply hear with this eagerness, offenselessly, and not in the mode of passion or ignorance or even goodness, we can gradually become fearless, we can become free of lamentation, we can become undisturbed in our lives, we can become peaceful and happy, detached as well as knowledgeable. We can attain complete faith in Krishna, evoke his presence in our lives, receive Krishna's mercy, establish our loving service to him, prepare for our next life, transform this world into Vaikuntha. We can learn how to preach nicely, present these teachings to others. We can become fully self-realized, and we can go back home, back to Godhead. So this is the potential of this eagerness to hear, eager hearing. So one may say, well, how does one become eager to hear? Well, the attempt must be there. The desire must be there. And then also, we have this God-given intelligence. We should become thoughtful about what we hear and never give up. Be persistent in it also. This persistence is also recognized by Krishna. And it's stated also that we can hear with respect, saturated with affection. And of course, with great faith. And if one doesn't have that faith, as I did in the beginning, I didn't have that faith. In fact, I was very skeptical and cynical about the whole process. But simply by trying, that mood changed, because the process is so powerful. We were hearing from some of the Bhakti Shastri students that perhaps they didn't have faith in the scriptures that they were about to study. And so all we can do is to encourage them to take up the process, including the sadhana, the daily sadhana. And then Krishna in our hearts, he notices that, and he gives us this faith, this strong faith to continue with sincerity, with humility, with this service attitude. And the service attitude is also very important. By rendering service to the pure devotees, all that is inauspicious in the heart will be destroyed. So it's rendering service as well as hearing the Bhagavatam. So along with the sadhana, the service to the Vaishnavas, to the Lord, to the spiritual master, is also an integral part of this process, an essential part that should never be overlooked or minimized. And to serve also with the attitude of trying to please, not with getting attention or getting ahead or that sort of ambition, but with the attitude to please. So a very interesting question is raised in the Bhagavatam much later on in the 10th canto, that Parikshit Maharaj, who is the perfection of hearing, he says to Sukadeva Goswami, but the air is one of Krishna's external energies. Our bodies are also made of earth, wire, air, ether, mind, intelligence. These things are also material. And the vibration, the sound vibration that goes through the air is also material. So how can it have this transcendental effect? this transcendental impact? It's a very good question, yeah? In other words, we're dealing with everything material, the mouth, the air that it travels through, the sound vibrations, it enters our ear, this is all material, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence. So these are all material things. So where is the transcendental effect derived from all these material things? And it's explained that, yes, these things are material, but they come from Krishna. They come from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they can be spiritualized. And the great mercy of Krishna is that he and his name are non-different. He says that himself. There is no difference between the named and he who is named. The name and the person are non-different. So that means that by chanting Krishna's name, by reciting the Bhagavatam, Krishna's instructions, the instructions of his servants, that we transcendentalize, we Krishnize, we spiritualize all these things so they can have this incredible effect upon us of transforming our lives. It's described that being in the material world is like being bitten by a snake. If you're bitten by a snake, you can be in a comatose condition, unconscious. Just like in the material world, people are completely unaware of spiritual life and the benefits of spiritual life, totally engrossed in their mundane activities. So there are mantras that can save a person in this comatose condition, having been bitten by a snake. And similarly, we have the Maha Mantra that can also wake us up, that can help us emerge from our comatose condition, just as the snake-bitten person is awakened. I want to also point out, there's this beautiful song that we sing every day, the Guru Vandanam. There's this verse here, the first two lines of the second verse, Guru Mukha Padmavakya Chitte Te Koriya Aikya Arna Koriya Mane Asa. I was Prabhupada's photographer for some years, and at some point we traveled throughout the east coast of America. And of course, everywhere he went, Prabhupada would give lectures. And so on two occasions, in New York and Philadelphia, Prabhupada said he challenged us. He's sitting on the Vyasa sign, he challenged us. You sing this song every morning, do you know the meaning? And so I think it was after that we started reciting the English translation to try to catch the meaning. But he said also that this song is written in Bengali. It's simple Bengali by Narottam Das Thakur. But every word has great meaning. It's the same as reading the scriptures. It's so potent. So this is relevant, these two lines. The guru, of course, refers to the spiritual master. Mukha is the mouth, and Padma is the lotus mouth. So the spiritual master is always describing that Supreme Lord who resides on a lotus-like planet. And so therefore his mouth is related to the lotus in that way. Vakya, the words. So the words that come from this lotus mouth of the spiritual master. Chitte te koriya aikya. Chitte te means my consciousness. And aikya means oneness. Not oneness in the sense of merging, but oneness of purpose. Unity of purpose. That this is the goal. This is what my desire is. Then arna koriya mane asa. So that means, asa can mean desire or hope. In my mind, I want no other desire, no other hope, than to have my consciousness unified, one in purpose, with those words coming from the lotus mouth of my guru. Jai Shri Shri Radha. So this is an extremely potent, heartfelt prayer by Narottam Das Thakur that we can all take shelter of, that we become absorbed with this eagerness to hear, we become absorbed in these words and take them into our hearts so that when we're presented with philosophy that is not explained properly from the impersonalists, from sense gratifiers, we can distinguish that and avoid exposing ourselves to that. There's a beautiful statement also in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, that Prithu Maharaj, who is the son of King Vena, a demon, a great demon, he becomes king, and he decides to do 100 horse sacrifices. And Indra, the king of heaven, is very disturbed by this desire of King Prithu, because he has done 100 horse sacrifices, and he doesn't want the competition. So after 99 horse sacrifices, King Prithu's horse is stolen by Indra so that he can't do the 100th one. And the story goes on that King Prithu's son chases Indra. Indra dresses like a sannyasi, and the son thinks, well, no, I shouldn't really do anything. And then he's advised by a muni, no, this is Indra, you should trying to cheat in this way. So this happens twice. And finally, Lord Brahma comes and says to Prithu Maharaj, just be happy with 99 horse sacrifices. Don't worry. Don't worry about the 100th horse sacrifice. And Indra comes also, and the Supreme Personality of Vishnu comes to the sacrificial arena. And he offers all sorts of benedictions to Prithu Maharaj, and he says to Prithu Maharaj, what would you like? What benediction would you like? So Prithu Maharaj, he has trouble replying. He's so overcome with ecstasy to be in the presence of the Lord. Tears fill his eyes, and his voice is stuttering. He can't say much. Finally, he composes himself, and he offers beautiful prayers to the Lord. So that's very relevant to our discussion today. I wanted to read a couple of those. This is Prithu Maharaj speaking to Vishnu, who has appeared in the arena. My dear Lord, I therefore do not wish to have the benediction of merging into your existence, a benediction in which there is no existence of the nectarian beverage of your lotus feet. I want the benediction of at least 1 million ears, for thus I may be able to hear about the glories of your lotus feet from the mouths of your pure devotees. Rupa Goswami has a similar prayer. He says, I do not know how much nectar is in the two syllables, Krishna, but when I hear those syllables, they dance within my mind, they dance on my tongue. My senses, my material senses, become inert, and I wish to have millions of ears and millions of tongues. So it's very similar to what Prithu Maharaj is saying here. And he goes on, my dear Lord, you are glorified by the selected verses uttered by great personalities. Such glorification of your lotus feet is just like saffron particles. When the transcendental vibration from the mouths of great devotees carries the aroma of the saffron dust of your lotus feet, the forgetful living entities gradually remember his eternal relationship with you. Devotees thus gradually come to the right conclusion about the value of life. My dear Lord, I therefore do not need any other benediction but the opportunity to hear from the mouth of your pure devotees. And Prabhupada explains very poetically, although when a pure devotee speaks, the articulation of his voice may resemble the sound of this material sky, the voice is spiritually very powerful because it touches the particles of saffron dust on the lotus feet of the Lord. It touches the particles of saffron dust on the lotus feet of the Lord. As soon as a sleeping living entity hears the powerful voice emanating from the mouth of a pure devotee, he immediately remembers his eternal relationship with the Lord, although up until that moment, he had forgotten everything. So this is our opportunity in Krishna consciousness. Perhaps there's some discussion on these points, I hope.